Hey everyone, it's your old friend Ariel Helwani. It is Wednesday, May 15th, 2019. Welcome back to a brand new episode of the MMA Reporters. So great to be here with all of you. Beautiful Wednesday here in New York City. As always, a lot to discuss coming off UFC 237 in Rio, Bellator in Rosemont, Illinois. We are looking forward to the UFC's debut in exotic Rochester. Big fights being made left and right. So much going on. But I just want to thank everyone for reaching out over the past 24 hours or so about the Knicks. I had a blast doing the draft lottery show. Thanks to everyone who allowed me to be a part of it. But I'm good. I'm happy. I don't think I've ever been happier. At least in the last two decades being a Knicks fan. RJ Barrett, the prodigal son. Great. I won't bore you with all of this if you don't care. But if you're interested, it's on my Instagram and all that stuff. It was fun. All right. But I'm not depressed. I'm not sad. I'm not your, you know, your prototypical Knicks fan who is crying. I'm good. I'm happy. But I do appreciate everyone who reached out. That was a lot of fun. And I hope to do more of it. For now, though, MMA talk all the time on this podcast. And we have a lot to discuss. Like I said, later in the show, we're going to be joined by the newest member of the team. I'll keep calling him that until someone else trumps him as far as, you know, tenure is concerned. Mark Raimondi will join us. We'll also be joined by Brett Okamoto. But first, let's say hello to the returning New York Rick, who I do believe, I've not seen him with my own two eyes, but I do believe he is back from Brazil. Is that accurate?
I am back. I am back in the United States. I am back in Bristol, Connecticut. And I dare say better than ever.
Wow. Okay. I'll ask you why you are better than ever. But first, I wanted to include you. I'm happy that you're here right off the top because, as you may have seen, I know you were in Brazil and very busy over there. I'm not sure if you had any, you know, data on your phone to go on social media and whatnot. But you may have seen that on Friday, I teased that I would have a fun announcement for UFC 238 week in Chicago. And so here is more information on said announcement. For the longest time, New York Rick and I have been talking about and dreaming about doing a live taping of the Monday show. At the time, it was the MMA Hour. Now it's Ariel Helwani's MMA show. It's the same exact show, just a different name, new home. You all know the drill. You know the story. We've been talking about doing a live taping of the show the Friday before a big UFC event on location, so to speak, in the city where the UFC is in town. People are looking for things to do Friday evening before the fight. You're excited. You want to come together. And for the longest time, I used to pitch this idea at our former employer. I used to talk about it all the time. And for whatever reason, it never came to fruition. Well, I am happy and excited and proud and giddy over the fact that it has finally come to fruition. On Friday, June 7th, so in less than a month, in Chicago, in Chi-Town, we will have a live taping of my podcast. There will be an audience there. There will be guests there. There will be a Q&A. There will be a meet and greet. There will be refreshments, all kinds of things. It's going to be amazing. Tickets go on sale on Monday. On Monday's show, I will have more information about all of this, but I just want you all to circle this on your calendar right now. Friday, June 7th at around 7 p.m., I'll have the location on Monday for you as well. It's all set, but I'm just doing the slow build here. We are going to do this, my friends, live in front of you. Guests, Q&A, meet and greet, all that stuff, what I've been wanting to do for a long time, to interact with the people, to be there face-to-face, shake hands, kiss babies, all that things that, you know, you do in these live podcasts. I want to do it all. I want to do it all, and I can't wait for it. I'm so excited about this. I'm more excited about this than the actual event on Saturday. So again, if you're going to UFC 238, or if not, if you live in the Chicago area, if you want to travel, maybe this gives you more incentive to travel. I hope to see you there June 7th, and stay tuned Monday on the show. I will tell you all the details and how you can secure your tickets for this amazing event, the first of many. How do you feel about this, New York Rick?
I feel like you've got the hottest ticket in town that weekend.
Well,
I feel like
you said it, not me.
It's going to be, first of all, congratulations. This is a big step.
You know, we have to actually do it before you congratulate, but yeah,
congratulations on this becoming a reality. As you said, and I'm acutely aware, this has been something that you've wanted to do, I've wanted to do, we've wanted to do for a long time, and it's happening. So it's very exciting. Now my mind is wandering and trying to conceive of who the possible guest could be, what surprises are in store. But I guess we're going to have to wait and see.
Oh, yes.
You said that the build is slow at the moment, so we're going to leave them wanting a little bit more and then details to come.
I want to thank everyone who put this together, Elizabeth, Glenn, our guy Daniel back there will be there with us in Chicago. We are bringing an all-star cast for all of you. It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait for this. It's just going to be something that I've wanted to do for a long time. And we're not reinventing the wheel here. Other people do it at ESPN, other places as well. But I've just really felt like this was something that would be a lot of fun to do. So stay tuned. Monday, we'll have more on all of this. But I wanted to let you all know, June 7th, it's going down. All right. Now, 2:37, you went to Rio. When I spoke to you last Wednesday, you were kind of fresh off the plane. You hadn't experienced anything. Now that it has come and gone, you're back. What was it like being in Brazil for the first time?
Yeah, it was an experience for me. Never been to South America, as I mentioned last time we spoke. Got a real feel for Brazil. Did some traveling in Rio with the rest of the ESPN team. And, you know, I would be burying the lead if I didn't say had multiple trips to Bibisuka.
Yes.
Your beloved Açaí location of choice. And
yes.
I must say, you did not oversell what was happening there. It was as advertised. Some of the best Açaí I've had, some of the best food period I've had. So Bibisuka gets the big thumbs up. Ran into our old friend, speaking of BB, the BB, Brazilian beast, Guilherme Cruz, of MMA Fighting. You know, chatted with him a little bit, former colleague. And then we had the event, which I have to say, being in Brazil for an event with that many Brazilian fighters, there were 16 Brazilian fighters on the card, was something unlike any of the other events I had either worked or been to as a fan. The level of support, and none clearer than in the Jared Cannonier fight when Anderson Silva was injured and Cannonier was getting those boos raining down. I have not heard an arena in unison like that ever in my life.
I'm just happy that I didn't overhype the Açaí to the point that you felt like it was overrated.
The fact that
you told me that it was good, that it lived up to the hype, actually was a big relief.
I've had some decent Açaí here stateside, but it did not compare.
No.
That was the real thing, straight from the tap, from the source.
What was the mood like? Because early on, it was kind of shaping up to be a really depressing night for Brazilian MMA, right? Like Little Nog getting knocked out the way in which he did, adopted son, BJ Penn looking the way in which he did, Jose Aldo, Anderson Silva. I mean, Jessica Andrade really saved the whole show. Was it starting to feel depressing, hostile? How would you describe it?
I don't think anybody was really getting that nervous until the Jose Aldo fight. I think the walkout for Jose Aldo was special. Walking out in Rio, I actually was able to tail right behind him, and it was an incredible experience to see him, you know, descending into the crowd like that. But I would say it didn't feel like people were on pins and needles until the Jose Aldo fight, and then the tide started to turn. I almost feel like it kind of was reaching its apex actually with Aldo. I think everything was kind of leading toward Aldo, and then it was hard for the crowd to kind of get back into the fight with Anderson Silva after Aldo had lost. But I think after Jessica Andrade kind of turned the tide back, the crowd lost its mind, you know, as you would expect. But I think overall, you know, it was a disappointment from the, you know, the Brazilian crowd's perspective, with Jose Aldo getting defeated in the way he did. It just looked like a little bit of a listless performance. It didn't seem like, you know, Volkanovski was in danger of losing that fight at any point. So, I think that's where it was reaching its apex, but then unfortunately it kind of came down from there.
True or false? That was BJ Penn's last MMA fight.
Absolutely false. There's no way.
Wow.
If he had come away, got knocked out, maybe, but he, you know, the narrative to this point has been You know, I'm not going out there and getting knocked out in my fights. In fact, I believe he said that in a statement or an interview to BJPenn.com where he was saying, you know, look, it's not like I'm getting out there and getting absolutely crushed. And I think so I saw some fighters on Twitter echoing that sentiment. I don't think until that starts happening that he's going to walk away. I think he's going to continue to think that I was just right there. I was this close. You know, it wasn't the fight with Guida was not a dominant fight by Guida. I thought, you know, BJ had his opportunities and was in that fight. And I think until that, you know, promise or that hope evaporates, he's just going to keep, you know, lacing him up. So I don't think that this is it.
Final UFC fight?
I mean, I think they'll let him fight out his contract, so I don't know how many he has left, but I imagine that he'll finish that.
I wonder if they're actually keeping him on the roster because they don't want him to go to Bellator because Bellator has this deal to go to Hawaii.
Well, I mentioned that last week, and you said that he wouldn't be that valuable to somebody like a Bellator. Do you still feel
that
way?
The Hawaii part is a little different. I'm just trying to think of reasons why they keep allowing him to fight in their organization when in the past they've tried to stop others. We've talked about this ad nauseum at this point, but the fact that BJ Penn has now lost 7 in a row, and that's the longest losing streak in UFC history, and the fact that he hasn't won in 9 years, and that's half of his career. His career is 18 years long, so half of his career has been mired in this losing streak. We did this debate after 237, and the question was, like, has he hurt his legacy? I don't understand how you can say he hasn't hurt his legacy. Like, look, what's happening now isn't taking away from what he did in his prime. But this is now a major part of the story. It's not like he lost 3 in a row in the last 2 years of his career and it got a little depressing. This is 9 years without a win. This is 7 losses in a row, a record. Think of all the bad fighters in UFC history. He now holds the record for most losses in a row. How does that not affect his legacy? The legacy is the entire career. Like Michael Jordan playing for the Wizards is part of his story. You know what I mean? It's part of his career. In the fight game.
But how much do those Wizards years come up?
Okay, so that's the
conversation.
That was just 2 years. This is 9 years, right? This is 9 years that he hasn't won. And I know he took a break there in the middle, but like, how did this, when you talk about BJ Penn, let's say he retires today and in 5 years we're like, what was BJ Penn like? Man, he was incredible at his time. You know, in his heyday, he was the man. He was pound for pound, one of the best, blah, blah, blah. But golly, did he stick around 9 years too long? Did he break the record? I mean, how do you not bring it up? How is it not the second sentence?
What I think BJ and others who, you know, are supporting, you know, this current run that he's on would argue is that BJ Penn's legacy is, no matter the odds, no matter how insurmountable they seemed, he was willing to fight. And I think this is an extension of that. I think that this 9-year losing streak, 7 fight longest in UFC history losing streak, is what BJ is. You know, no matter what, he's going to continue to fight, whether it be in this specific, in his career, whether it be in a specific fight. His legacy or the defining characteristic of his legacy is going to be that no matter what was in front of him, he was continuing to fight. Now, do I think that he's harming what people from the outside will think of him? I certainly do, but I do think this is a symptom of what made him great is also now harming him in terms of his legacy.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. He'll fight anytime, anywhere, but now he's losing anytime, anywhere.
Yep. It's absolutely detrimental. If you're looking at a record book and you look at BJ Penn, it would be very hard to explain to somebody what made him special as he continues to rack up these losses.
All right. So what about Anderson Silva? Because I said last week, the thing about Anderson is he's not getting shown up. He's not getting knocked out for the most part. He's not getting embarrassed. He doesn't look his age for the most part. I mean, he was hanging with Israel Adesanya, who's a lot younger. This, to me, felt like the first time where he kind of started to look his age, first time that he's been finished since 2003. Was this his last fight, in your opinion?
No, another one where I think like the circumstance plays into that. And I also believe Igor Rezende out of Brazil, ESPN Brazil, had spoken to his team, and it seemed like he was going to actually re-up for more fights with the UFC.
But that was before the fight.
Now, before the fight, but I don't think it's in his mind or in his intention to walk away. I started to get that sense when he was very emotional on the stage with Israel Adesanya at the weigh-ins for that fight. But now, since, it seems like all the talk, at least coming out of him and his camp, seems to be that he's looking to not only play this out, but actually extend the contract with the UFC. So I think this is the type of thing where it felt like, you know, he was gravely injured. It was kind of a freak thing, not dissimilar to when his leg was snapped. Now, obviously, not even close to as severe. But I don't think he'll look at this as getting dominated or losing in dominant fashion. I think he'll look at this as a freak thing that he's able to bounce back from. So I don't see this as the writing on the wall for Anderson Silva.
You know, Anderson, for the longest time, did not speak English in interviews. And I think that that hurt his marketability here in the United States. It hurt him in the sense that I think it was hard for people to relate to him, to really get a feel for who he is, because he has a wonderful character. It's just hard when you don't speak the language. And I bring that up because I feel like the UFC has a real task on their hands here to try and get people to care about Jessica Andrade. Jessica Andrade is a really tough fighter. She's now the new UFC strawweight champion. She won the belt in spectacular fashion. It was a little gruesome. It was a little hard to watch. It was very scary to watch. But she won that fight fair and square. That was not illegal. And I think this right now, this result, they'll never admit it, but I think this was a major blow to the UFC, because I think Rose was on the cusp of superstardom, different kind of superstar, different kind of personality. Not a very flashy person, but very relatable, very likable, great backstory. And now she gets beat by someone who doesn't speak English and who the public doesn't really know. Do you share my assessment that this night kind of ended poorly for the UFC? And now they really, like, if I were them, I'd invest right now. I spoke to her manager, Tiago Akamura, Jessica's manager, and he said they're already talking about taking English courses and things. Like, the UFC should help. Like, it's to their benefit to have her start to speak English, because she does have a great backstory. She's been through a lot. She's overcome a lot. But I think no one knows and is able to connect to her because she can't speak English. That's just a fact of the matter.
Yeah, I would say I agree to an extent. I'd say yes and no, in the sense that I think Jessica Andrade has an equally compelling story, as you've said. And not only that, her fighting style, much like Rose's, is incredibly exciting. Jessica Andrade is going to come forward and try to hurt people in a way that fight fans can get behind. I don't think this is a case where somebody, you know, was able to upset Rose in a fashion that was grinding her out or something like that. She slammed her on her head, and now whether you agree that those specific types of slams should be illegal or not is a completely separate conversation. But she is an exciting fighter, suffice it to say. So learning English would certainly be a benefit to her. Where I slightly disagree is I don't think Rose was on the cusp of superstardom. I think she had a ways to go. I definitely think she is much more of the Khabib Nurmagomedov mold, where it's going to take some time for people to understand what's behind her and what's behind that personality and a little more about her before they were willing to get behind her. And I also think she needed that appropriate foil. And in this case, I actually think she may have that. If she's willing to stick this out, if she's coming back, and now a lot of her talk after the fight was that she was having reservations even leading into the fight. If she does stick around and if she does continue this career, and I think she's, you know, at the top of the game, Jessica Andrade could be that foil for her. And I think, much like Khabib needed a Conor McGregor, I think she needed somebody like a Jessica Andrade to be able to push her, because I don't think that on her own she would have ever achieved those heights without an appropriate foil. I just think she needs somebody to kind of play off, and I think Jessica can be that person.
Okay, so now the big question is, who will Jessica fight in her first title defense? Do they try to convince Rose to run it back? Should they run it back with her, or do you wait and see who wins between Tatiana Suarez and Nina Ansaroff, or do you give it to Michelle Waterson, who the UFC is clearly high on? You talk about people who are popular, who are marketable. They work with her from a representation standpoint, WME. And I saw a tweet. I can't see it myself because, unfortunately, I'm blocked. But I saw a tweet where Dana White said essentially that he agreed that she should be considered next. Who are you going with for Jessica first?
Yeah, I think it depends on timing. I wouldn't do Rose immediately. I think Rose needs to get another fight under her belt before she's in a rematch with Jessica Andrade. Talking about lacking motivation heading into the fight, the way she lost that fight, I don't know if jumping back in there immediately with Jessica Andrade is the way to go. So I would have her fight somebody else. Now, thinking about Waterson or the winner of Suarez versus Ansaroff, I think it just depends on timing. I think if, you know, Tatiana Suarez can get a win, or Nina Ansaroff can get a win over Tatiana Suarez, and the timing lines up, I think those are very worthy number one contenders. I think Watterson is a notch below that. I think one more win would put her over there. But if the timing doesn't work, if Ansarov or Suarez are too banged up, I wouldn't have a problem with Watterson being put in there. But I think the priority should go to that number one contender fight between Ansarov and Suarez.
I think the UFC has done a great job of developing this 115-pound weight class, and they did inherit a lot of great fighters not that long ago when they took, you know, the majority of the Invicta contenders and put them on the Ultimate Fighter. But I would say right now, as far as the female weight classes are concerned, 145, 135, 125, 115, those are the ones in the UFC. I'm not going to consider 105 because it's not in the UFC. This is by far the most interesting, right? This is by far the deepest. When you consider those names, when you consider Wei Li Zhang, who wants to fight Joanna Jacek, which I think would be a fascinating fight, when you consider Cynthia Calvillo and Tisha Torres still out there, I mean, there are just a bunch of good fighters. I feel like, look, I know what I said about Rose losing being a blow, but I definitely feel like it's the most interesting and fun female weight class out there. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I think this to me is the premier division that the UFC has for women, and I think 155 is that for men in the UFC, so I'm aligned with you on that.
Do you think they'll ever do a 105?
I don't think so. I think, you know, they're already... I don't think 145 even, you know, has enough fighters in it to consider it a division. It seems like most of the 145ers are 135ers that are going up for title shots. So I would be hesitant to think that they would introduce 105. I think 145 was only introduced because Chris Cyborg is so dominant and exists in that weight class. I don't think 105 has a fighter like that would, you know, force them to introduce 105.
For now. Although 145 has a great one this weekend between former Invicta champion Felicia Spencer and former Invicta champion Megan Anderson.
That's right. There have only been three Invicta featherweight champions: Chris Cyborg, Megan Anderson, and Felicia Spencer. Two of them are squaring off on Saturday.
In the Rock.
In the Rock.
As the kids like to call it. All right, my man. Well, welcome back.
Thank you
very
much.
It's good to have you. I'm sorry about the Cavs yesterday. You know, for the record, I did not rub it in, unlike you, who would have rubbed it in.
Oh, I certainly would have rubbed it in.
I mean, you were rubbing it in before the fact. It didn't even happen yet, and you were rubbing it in.
If we didn't fall flat on our faces like that, I would have certainly rubbed it in.
Well deserved.
Enjoy RJ Barrett. He's going to be great. Meanwhile, I have no idea what's next for the Cavs, and I'm very depressed.
I wish I could say I feel bad, but I don't. I'll talk to you next week.
Bye, my friend.
There he is, New York Rick, stopping by. Good to have him back from Brazil. Let's keep this conversation going, but I want to turn our attention to Rose a little more. Say hello to Brett Okamoto of ESPN, who's joining us right now. Brett, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Ariel?
Where are you, Brett? Are you like in a wind tunnel or something?
I'm sitting outside of the gym, actually. I was getting a little workout in, and I lost track of time, so I stepped outside because I don't think you want to hear the club music in the background.
No, no. Wow, rivaling Big Guns Phil. I like it. Well, we'll see.
He sets the bar high, man. I mean, you got to do what you can. Keep up with the guy.
It's almost impossible to rival that guy. I mean, he's a physical specimen, but I appreciate the effort. I want to ask you about Rose. We were just talking about Andrade. We were talking about the fight, but I want to focus on Rose because you did spend time with Rose and you've been covering Rose for quite some time. After the fight, she talked about, you know, I don't know if I want to do this again. I don't know if I'm going to come back. I've been feeling these thoughts for quite some time. Were you caught off guard by that based on, you know, what you were hearing and feeling from her in the time that you spent with her before the fight? And do you believe, based on what you know, that she will, in fact, never fight again?
I was caught off guard just from the sense of her saying it as quickly as she did. I mean, I had the impression that Rose is not one of those people who's going to fight into her mid-30s, you know? It was kind of interesting. And looking back on it, you know, obviously with the benefit of 2020, when I was doing, you know, the interview with her at her house in Denver, I remember a very simple question I asked her was, why do you fight, Rose? I mean, what is the reason that you fight? And she like hesitated. She couldn't answer it right away. And she kind of stumbled through it and she said, you know, it's a way to, you know, challenge myself. I like the challenge. I like competition, you know, kind of a generic answer. And then when her fiance, Pat Barry, sat down, I interviewed him second and I asked him the same thing. And even he kind of didn't give me a great answer. And then I remember we were in the backyard just kind of watching her dog play, and we were letting actually the camera crew get all the stuff out of their house. So we were just kind of hanging out. And Pat looked at me and he said, you know, the reason why she fights actually is because she's just very, very, very good at it, you know? And then he also told me that there's this painting above Rose's breakfast table. And I noticed it because, you know, we were sitting there in her living room, which is connected to her kitchen. And I saw this painting up over her breakfast table. And Pat told me that was actually painted by her late father. He was really, really talented as a painter, but he never really did anything with it. And so I think Rose feels like this, has felt in her life some kind of obligation to use her talents and to turn it into something. But again, looking back, it did strike me as, you know, I don't think Rose necessarily loves doing this. I think she is passionate about it. I think she's emotionally tied to it. But as far as, you know, preparing for a specific fight and then going through fight week and then all that, I don't think that she's one of those people that just has to do it. You know, I think she is, whether she retires right now or a little bit down the road, I don't think she's here for the long run.
You think she fights again, though?
Yeah, I mean, we know Rose is emotional, right?
Right.
And even though it seemed like she handled the loss extremely well, I mean, it almost seemed like she was, I won't say happy to have lost, but she was definitely okay with it. It does seem like kind of an emotional thing to say, yeah, you know, this may be my last one, but, you know, for her to say that she was thinking about it beforehand, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out that she'd be done, but if I had to put a bet on it, I would think she'd done.
As you mentioned, we have heard this before from fighters who have lost their belt and have, you know, sort of just been okay with it. And it's somewhat shocking because you want to almost see them, you want to see them mourn, you want to see them cry, you want to see them sad, and then you see the relief, and it's like, wow, this is an epiphany. My theory is, I haven't talked to Rose since the fight, but my theory is it's like the pressure of just getting to the title. And, of course, she lost a title fight before against Carlos Barza just to get to the title, the physical and mental toll that it takes to get there. And then once you get there, you know, you want to, you know, you want to make all this money, you want to get all these endorsements, you want to get all this stuff, and maybe it takes a little time to get there, and then you have all these people coming after you, and then you start thinking about, oh my God, if I lose, I have to go down to the bottom of the ladder. It's just a lot to handle. So I understand. I've never been in there before. I've never fought before. I've never dealt with that kind of pressure. But I saw someone say, like, that's not pressure. That's, you know, the guy who wakes up at 5 a.m. to go to the McDonald's drive-thru. That's pressure. This is a real kind of pressure. There's a lot, like, these aren't rich people. These aren't millionaires. And so I kind of understand where she's coming from, even though she didn't say it like that.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, I obviously would want to hear it in her words, but I think what you're describing is probably, if not spot on, you know, along the right lines. You know, it is a ton of pressure, and I think that even people like yourself and myself who are very close to the sport, we kind of forget about it. You know, I mean, I was talking to somebody just yesterday, actually, who's close with another US champion. He compared it to a nonstop political campaign. You know, where it's like just things can change so quickly and your value can rise and fall depending on, you know, one tweet that you put out or one fight that you're not even associated with, and then someone calls you out and now you have like a quote unquote rival or you have a grudge match and doesn't need to respond. I mean, it's just constant. As you know, it's constant storylines. There's constant pressures to respond to those storylines. There's constant, you know, media people pulling you in one direction or asking for interviews, and then you got to think about what you're going to say in those interviews, and then you know, to an extent, a lot of these guys are stressed out about how they're going to look in those interviews. I mean, it's just, it's everything, man. It's all of it. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if an individual like Rose, who is very private, and you know, another thing she told me is that she felt throughout her life that she hasn't really had a home. Now she feels like she does have a home, and she just wants to be there in peace. Yeah, I would think that a UFC championship and all of the responsibilities that come with it would be a lot of pressure on her.
Okay, now let me ask you about the Jose Aldo Alex Volkanovski fight, and in particular Volkanovski. So he wins 17 in a row, 7-0 in the UFC, win over Jose Aldo in Rio, 20-1 as a professional. But then on Monday, you break the news that not Volkanovski is fighting for the belt next. It will be, in fact, Frankie Edgar, July 27th. In Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And so, I mean, one would think that this was in the works for quite some time and the result on Saturday had nothing to do with it. How do you feel about this? Do you feel like the UFC got this one right?
As long as Alex Volkanovski gets his title shot without having to fight again, then I don't mind it. I mean, this might sound like a safe answer, but I don't know if there was necessarily a right way to go here if you can do both, if that makes sense. You know, I get it. I get anybody out there who's saying that Alex is getting the short end of the stick here because I will agree he is the number one contender over Frankie Edgar. But, you know, he did just fight this last week, and he's had three fights in the last 10 months. The UFC has mentioned, you know, the possibility and their desire to, you know, go back to Australia this year with that big title fight between Israel Adesanya and Robert Whittaker. If that happens, you know, and Max Holloway is a guy who I have heard wants to fight frequently. You know, he's coming off of that five-round fight against Dustin Poirier, but he's taking a fight again here in July. That's pretty quick turnaround, especially considering the fight he just came off of. And I think he's going to want to fight again in pretty short order, depending on what happens on July 27th. So if he can have both, I'm okay with it. But, you know, if Max goes out and beats Frankie, or Frankie beats Max, and then there's talk about, you know, skipping over Alex again, well, then I will say, well, you know what, we shouldn't have created this situation in the first place and given Frankie the shot. But I know I'm kind of hedging my bet there, but I think that there's a very realistic possibility we get both, and so if that happens, I'm okay with it.
You know, I feel the same in the sense that you have to almost judge this once the whole situation plays out, once you see, you know, as you said, if Volkanovski fights on that Australian card, because that would make all the business sense in the world. The one part that kind of irks me a little bit about all of this is like, oh, you know, we're repaying Frankie for taking that fight against Brian Ortega on short notice and risking his title shot. Well, the thing is that he lost that fight, so you can't really pay him back for that. Like, the whole point of that fight was to see who the new number one contender was going to be. And the guy, you know, we're comparing a 17-fight winning streak to a one-fight winning streak. Like, if you just want to say, look, the timing doesn't work out here, Frankie's the next best guy, you know, he's a legend, cool. But this idea that, like, oh, he deserves to be repaid for taking that fight and losing that fight convincingly, to me, doesn't fly. It makes no sense. Because then now you're opening up this precedent where everyone's like, hey, I did you this solid, why don't you pay me back for this? No, like, the whole point of this game is to win in advance. That's the part that bothers me here.
Yeah, and I don't disagree necessarily with you feeling that way. I would say that I don't agree with you 100% in that I think it's okay to be part of the equation. I don't think it should be the equation. You know, I don't think that the UFC should just hand out a title shot because a fighter did them a favor at one point. But I do think that it's fair and not all that unreasonable to build it in the equation of look, Frankie Edgar had won something like 5 of 6 fights. The only featherweight that he had lost to was Jose Aldo, who, you know, I still consider the greatest featherweight of all time. He had lost to him twice. He had beaten everybody else. He had a guaranteed shot. He did not have to go in and take that fight against Brian Ortega. He could have pulled off of that card. But being the guy that he is, he said, yeah, I'll take the next guy up. And then he gets hit by one elbow. And then he comes back and wins the fight. I understand it was against Cub Swanson, who's a little bit on a skid, but he comes back immediately, takes a fight, wins it, and then is injured. I think that it's okay to look at the whole thing in context. You know, I mean, Alex Volkanovski, again, as I mentioned previously, is the number one contender based on all the merits that he has. But I also think that you can look at the context of Frankie and not just look at it as, well, the guy hasn't fought in, you know, however long it's been, 12 months, and he only has a one fight win streak. Well, yeah, you can say that. But if you put it in the bigger context that he's won 5 of his last 6, part of the reason he hasn't fought was because he was injured. You know, he was ranked above Volkanovski before Volkanovski happened to have had this last. You can justify it. I'm not saying that it's necessarily right or wrong, because, again, I'm not sure that there's necessarily a right or wrong answer here. It kind of came down to timing. It kind of came down to, you know, I think that there was a built-in part of it, of course. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. This is a business. I think Frankie Edgar still is a more of a household name than Volkanovski, so I'm sure that didn't hurt his chances here. I mean, when you look at the whole picture, I'm okay with it. You know, it's not something that I'm saying, yes, this had to be the way they did it. This is the only fight they could have made. But I don't think it's egregious to the point that I'm going to be outraged by it, especially, again, if Alex gets a title shot later this year.
Okay, you know, the other thing that hasn't really been brought up, because so much attention has been put on the Volkanovski-Edgar debate, is the fact that Holloway just lost a month ago, and now he's already agreeing to a fight that's not that far away. It's in 2 months. How do you feel about the fact that he's agreeing to a fight a month after this loss, where he was kind of, you know, he was kind of beat up. He took some big shots. It's been a while since he took shots like that. And you have to factor in the weight cut now, so it's a little bit more of a toll on his body. This seems like a little bit of a quicker turnaround than I expected if you would have asked me on April 14th, the day after his loss to Dustin Poirier. Are you surprised by this? I know you said he wants to fight, and I get that, but it just seems a little quick here after a loss.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I spoke to some people on his camp, you know, obviously, as this fight was being made, and one thing that they said is that cosmetically, this is their take, obviously. This is their perception. And then obviously being close to Max, speaking to him, you know, getting him back to Hawaii, that cosmetically he looked worse than he felt after that Dustin Poirier fight. And he didn't have any, you know, complications, I guess, if you want to call it, or he didn't have any, like, you know, injuries that they were really concerned about. He got cut, and, you know, they said that that probably led to people thinking that he was in worse shape than he was, but, you know, one of them told me, look, it's not my goal to run Max out too quickly. I mean, if anything, we want to err on the side of caution, but when we got back to Hawaii and we really investigated and looked into, like, the extent of his injuries, he's good. You know, he's back in the gym, and he's good to go, and he wanted to fight. He wanted to fight again. He's in shape, so let's keep him moving. And I tend to respect their decision because Max's team is, you know, they are very, I would say, self-aware. I get that sense of them. You know, I mean, they were the ones who pulled the plug on Max Holloway when he was supposed to fight Brian Ortega last summer. You know, and I know that one seems like an obvious one, but they had the authority and the wherewithal to say, hey, you know, we don't want you to fight. That was his team's decision. So I think that they're cognizant, they are aware of his health, and if they feel comfortable, then I respect their opinion on it. I would imagine they would know best.
I do agree with that. Holloway's manager only manages him. He's not a guy that has like a million clients and is just trying to get a bunch of paydays. So they do seem very much in sync and a tight-knit group. So I asked that same question. They told me, we're comfortable, so you got to take their word for it. We'll see how it plays out July 27th in beautiful Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Thanks for doing this, Brett. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it, man. Anytime. Sorry about that. Sorry about that draft lottery last night. But
it's all good.
You're already in better spirits.
I'm in better spirits.
For you.
I appreciate it. Thank you. So there he is, Brett Okamoto, joining us from Las Vegas. By the way, that arena in Edmonton is phenomenal. Rogers Arena. I would venture to say it's in my top three. I think it's still my number one. The new Little Caesars Arena in Detroit. I think it's Little Caesars Arena in Detroit.
It definitely is Little Caesars Arena in Detroit.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Daniel's the Detroit guy. Have you been to that?
I have not been there yet. That is one of the things I'm looking forward to doing when I head back to Detroit sometime this summer.
It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. And they did a really cool thing where they have like – all these outdoor restaurants within the arena. They did a phenomenal job. UFC was there two Decembers ago, and I highly recommend it. So that's up there. Rogers Arena, new as well, up there. So I'm looking forward to going back there July 27th. Now let's say hello to the newest member of the team. I said this at the top of the show. I'm going to keep calling you the newest member of the team, Mark, until someone trumps you as far as tenure is concerned, until a new rookie comes on board. So I just want to let you know that, but it's good to have you back on the program. How are you?
Even after like 5 years, what if after 5 years I'm still the newest member of the team? Is that still going to be my intro?
Yes, but I'm hopeful that our team will continue to expand within the next. I hope that there's 10 more newest members of the team between now and 5 years. But for now, that's your title, and also Murundi, in honor of the great Daniel Cormier, who first coined that nickname. good to have you back. A lot going on. I want to shift gears here and talk about a 24-hour stretch that I think rivaled any 24-hour stretch in UFC matchmaking history. Friday, Saturday, UFC finalized Tony Ferguson against Donald Cerrone and then Nate Diaz versus Anthony Pettis. Not on the same card. First one is UFC 238, June 8th, Chicago. Awesome. They wanted to beef that up. They got it done. They got Ferguson back against Cerrone. The second one is, of course, on August 17th. That will be the co-main event to Daniel Cormier versus Stipe Miocic. I want to start with Ferguson. You've reported on his personal issues this year. Were you surprised that he came back so soon?
I was a bit surprised. I'm not going to lie. I thought that it may take a little bit longer for him to get back in there. But I think the most recent news in this case, and of course we know that Tony Ferguson's wife filed for a temporary restraining order. She made a request for that earlier this year. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, that was dropped. That request for a restraining order was dropped. Some of the things that she wrote in the court filing, as I think we've all read, were very frightening. But her statement to the media, and you know this as well, Ariel, said that the only reason that she really did that, it wasn't because Tony Ferguson is a bad husband or a bad father to their child. It was that she felt like he needed to seek some kind of, I would imagine, psychiatric help, some kind of help from a doctor because of some of the things that were going on in his life at that time that was affecting the entire family. So to me, and I don't know this because I haven't spoken to his wife, but to me, the fact that she dropped the temporary restraining order request means that there are elements in place where Tony Ferguson is getting that help he needs. So I assume that that is all related to why he's now fighting Donald Cerrone on the card in Chicago in here, really just a few weeks. I mean, it's very close. So I was surprised because it all happened very quickly. That was only in March, I believe, when that really was happening. And now here we are just, a few weeks later, and now he's fighting in June. So I was surprised, but the signs have been good the last few weeks. And again, I hope the most important thing, of course, is that everything's okay with his family, with his wife, sure, with his son, and with his mindset and his mental health.
Okay, what about the fact that Cerrone, who just beat Ally Quinta, didn't get beat up, but went five rounds with him, started talking about a title fight, started talking about Conor McGregor. He comes around and is like, yeah, screw all that, I'm fighting. Now, of course, anyone who knows Donald Cerrone, who's covered him, who's followed him, who's been a fan of his, I think he's universally respected and liked winning his fight in UFC history, isn't surprised that he's taking a fight on short notice. But considering the fact that he's looked so good and seems to be pretty close to getting something big, whether it was a Conor fight or a title fight, are you surprised that he took this fight so soon?
I'll never be surprised that Donald Cerrone makes a quick turnaround and puts himself into a very tough situation very quickly. So I'm not surprised in that sense, but what he's been saying lately is that he really wants that title shot now. That's really what his goal is. It's no longer trying to fight 100 times a year. It is actually trying to move toward the title. Now, the division is jammed up a bit. I mean, we know that. Even if Cerrone rested on his laurels after a very impressive win over Ally Quinta in Ottawa, I don't know if that means he gets a title shot, because Dustin Poirier does seem like the next man in line. He is the interim champion after all, although we know that isn't worth a whole lot in today's UFC. Poirier seems to be the guy next, so where does that leave Cerrone? He probably needs to win one more time to get the next shot. And then there's always the possibility of Conor McGregor coming in whenever he darn well pleases and possibly taking a title shot away from someone. So I don't blame Cerrone in this instance, because a win over Ferguson does push the issue. The question is, can he beat Ferguson on short notice like this? That's going to be an insane fight.
Yeah, nice treat for the Chicago fans, because that card was pretty good. I mean, you have Moraes and Cejudo, but the UFC really wanted to beef it up. There's two titles on that card. There's also Shevchenko against Jeskai, but I think it's fair to say that that fight is the people's main event. By the way, I don't know if you can hear, maybe you can't, but Stephen A. Smith is yelling right next to me about the Knicks. It's pretty amazing.
Are you in the Seaport studio?
Yes, I am in the Seaport, and I'm literally watching him right now yell about the Knicks. And I tried to tell him, by the way, it's all good. RJ Barrett's the man, but he's still all fired up about it. So it's kind of awesome to watch this in person, and the door is open, so it's like literally bleeding all through my microphone. It feels like, or maybe I'm just a little more sensitive to it, and I shouldn't have brought it up. Anyway, let me talk to you about Anthony Pettis versus Nate Diaz.
Mm-hmm.
Almost exactly 3 years to the day of the last Nate Diaz fight, which kind of blows my mind that it's been 3 years since UFC 202, right? I mean, it's insane how fast time is flying. But here's Diaz coming back, and the fight's at 170, so Pettis is staying at 170. Like, again, I'll go back to the point that I think this 24-hour stretch, just these two fights alone, I mean, they hit it out of the park. I love Ferguson Cerrone from a matchup standpoint. I really feel like the winner of that fight could very much claim to be the number one contender. And it's just a fun style matchup. It's just great. And the fact that it's happening so soon, like you don't have to really wait for it, awesome. And then this fight, which is a fight that actually has been brewing for quite some time. I don't know if you heard Pettis on my show Monday, but like I've never heard him speak like that before. He's a no-nonsense kind of guy. He's not a very colorful interview, so to speak. I know you've talked to him as well, but he's the kind of guy who doesn't mince words. And when you hear him say, I really don't like this guy, it's personal. I would have chosen Nate over Connor, who's obviously the biggest money fight out there. It really hits home, and it made me so much more excited for that fight. Like I want to go to the press conference. I want to see them interact. I want to see the stare down. I miss Nate. I love covering Nate fights. I love watching. I can't say enough good things about this fight. Do you share my enthusiasm?
100% agree. I cannot wait for that fight because of the history between the two of them. I believe they got into it at a club one time, did they not? The Diaz brothers and Anthony and Sergio?
Did they? I don't remember that. When did they?
I believe they got into a skirmish at a club. I think TMZ might have had a video. This was a number of years ago. But I think that might be where the beef starts. I hope I'm not making that up, but I'm pretty sure that is the case.
I believe it was after UFC 202 is when that happened.
Wow. Look at Daniel coming in there.
Yeah, there you go.
Daniel just jumping in there.
So well, there I mean, I have the internet in front of me, so.
Nate was setting up his next fight right after losing to Conor McGregor at UFC 202. So at the after party, they got into it. And it actually goes back before that, I believe, but that's kind of where it came to a boil. And now here we are. It's a fantastic fight. Just seeing Nate Diaz back after 3 years. I mean, we've been waiting for this. We got a big tease last year when he was supposed to fight Dustin Poirier at Madison Square Garden in November. And now it seems like he's back. He's got a new contract with the UFC. Seems to be happy with the opponent and the timing. And he's wanted to come back. It was really just a matter of coming to an agreement. And here we are. And Pettis at 170 coming up with the Wonder Boy knockout. Perfect time. I mean, you cannot – if they were going to do Diaz versus Pettis, this is the perfect time for it.
And I know a lot of fans are sort of rolling their eyes. Oh, here we go, Diaz. We've been teased about Nick. We've been teased about Nate over the past 3 years. The whole thing with Poirier didn't pan out. This feels – even though we've – you know, we saw Poirier and Diaz square off at that press conference in L.A. Back in August of last year before the Cejudo-DJ fight. Even though we saw that and we have yet to see these two square off at a press conference, this feels a lot more real. Like hearing Pettis talk the way in which he did about Diaz, knowing how Diaz feels about Pettis as well, knowing how much he's itching to come back. I know he's just really excited to get back. I don't want to use the word excited. The Diaz brothers hate the word excited, but he is very much looking forward to getting into a training camp, getting on a regimen, getting a schedule for, you know, an upcoming fight on his books, so to speak. This feels very real. Like this is not, other than an injury happening, of course, which could very well happen. We know that this is a fight that is going to happen. And I don't think any fan, I saw a lot of people say, oh, BS, this is not going to happen, shenanigans. No, this is an actual real fight that is going to happen. Another fight that is going to happen, at least as of right this moment, Mark, is RDA versus Kevin Lee this Saturday in Rochester, 170 pounds as well. So Kevin Lee finally moving up to 170. But he said something interesting to me on Monday. He said, I would like to weigh in at 165 because I want to hammer home the point that there needs to be a 165-pound weight class. He's been one of those guys who has been campaigning for the 165-pound weight class, and there are a bunch of them out there. Ben Askren, Jorge Masvidal, Diaz as well has talked about it. Pettis as well has talked about it. And so what do you think about this idea from Kevin Lee? A, do you think he actually goes through with it? And B, do you think if he goes through with it, that it helps his cause in any way?
I cannot imagine any fighter who already cuts a lot of weight to cut five more just to prove a point when they don't have to. And I agree with his sentiment, and I wholeheartedly agree that division is needed in the UFC, and if not needed, it would be a boon on many levels. But I don't think he does it. I don't know if he'll get Dos Anjos to agree to it. Probably not. But I appreciate the sentiment. Maybe just the fact of him talking about it will get at least the word going. But this is a guy Kevin Lee's been talking about. The 165-pound division for years. He was one of the first ones to really say that it was needed, and so I respect that he is staying consistent with his message.
You think it will ever happen? Like, I still don't understand why they are so against it. And we've talked about this before, but it's just like I just named those names, right? Khabib, Conor, all these guys, Cerrone. It's just perfect. Dana never gives a reason. He never gives a reason why. I feel like his reason is, oh, I'm an old boxing guy. It muddies the waters a little bit. But you can't say that and then do all these interim title fights. And also, when you see the guys, maybe the other reason is, and again, I'm speculating here because he never really offers a reason. He just says no. Much like when he talked about women's MMA back in the day, he just said, no, I'm not into it. I don't like, you know, sometimes he would say, like, I don't like to see women get hit. But it was never like a valid reason, in my opinion. In this case, no valid reason. And you have all these big stars. Maybe he doesn't want to splinter 155. But don't you think 155, 165, 175, move 170 to 175, 185? I'm down with no 195. If you don't want to do 195, if you think it's a little too shallow, I could live with that. Then 205 and then 265. Like, it's just so perfect. I don't get the hesitation. I don't get why he is so against it. Do you?
it almost makes too much sense to do for a number of reasons. I mean, if you're going to add a weight class, that would be the position where you would do it in, because 155 and 170 are so stacked. I mean, those are the two most talented weight classes in the UFC right now, and historically that has been the case as well. So even if you added that 165 division, you really wouldn't be taking a ton away from 170. Maybe it'll be 175 if it changes, but it's 170 now, and 155. Plus, it would give flexibility to fighters to move back and forth. And I think that might be one of the reasons why they don't like it, because the UFC has traditionally not liked fighters bouncing back and forth between weight classes, although we're seeing it a lot more now than we ever have before. To me, it makes too much sense. And then on top of that, they're throwing out interim titles. They're giving away interim titles very often, and they don't really mean a whole lot. They're just putting them there for a title fight on a card. Well, wouldn't it be great to have an actual real title at 165 fill in a spot where you'd put an interim title, if that makes sense? I mean, they're looking for title fights. Well, there you go. There's a whole new division you can make that can have a title fight, and they would be premier level title fights because of all those names that you mentioned.
From a regulatory standpoint, you are more in touch with those guys. You know those guys better, ABC, all those guys. Would this be, like, if the UFC, explain to us the process here. Like, if the UFC said, you know what, we want to do this. We want to do 165. Like, would they step in? Would they have a problem with Nevada not recognize this? Are there any hurdles from that standpoint?
No, not at all. In fact, 165 is actually already a division in the ABC. It's a perfectly legal division. Any company, any promotion in the United States that runs shows in a commission that is overseen by the ABC can run 165 tomorrow. It's already in the rules, and so is 175, and so is 195, and so is 225. So it's already there. It can be used any time. It's just a matter of the promotion implementing it and adopting it. And also, Ariel, I'll take you behind the curtain even further.
Please.
Promotions create the weight classes in MMA, not the ABC. So if the U.S. and when I say weight classes, I mean titles.
Right. The
commissions do not govern titles whatsoever. So if the UFC wanted to make a 162-pound title, they could do that. It's the UFC title. The commission does not have any say over titles.
My biggest question is, what would they call the 165-pound weight class? Is there already a name assigned to it?
There is already a name. I believe it's super lightweight.
Yeah, see, I feel like that actually works against it, because I had a feeling that that was what it was going to be, and I feel like that reminds Dana of the boxing world, where it gets a little...
Like, you can call it whatever you
sure,
want.
Sure,
you can
sure.
call it Diaz weight. I mean, you can call it
money
McGregor
weight.
Weight. I mean,
money weight.
Exactly. You can call it whatever you want.
I feel like in our lifetime, we
you
will see...
call it Dana weight if that'll make him feel better.
Yeah, that would be incredible. That would be the ultimate, like, power trip, right? Do a belt with your face on it. And just call it the Dana weight.
I mean, if that means fighters not having to cut all the way to 155, who can't really do that in a healthy way, I don't mind. Dana's bald head on a title belt.
Okay, in my lifetime, I will predict, and I hope my life doesn't end tomorrow. But I hope that we see a 165, and I think we will see a 165-pound division. Do you believe the same?
I think so. But it doesn't seem like there's any urgency to do that anytime soon.
Yeah, it's so bizarre. It really is bizarre. It's one of those things that I just, even the possibility now of having Khabib be a dual champion, isn't that great? Like, don't you want that? That just makes him an
of
even
course.
Bigger star. It's so close
I'm,
to those.
I'm looking now at the ABC, the names for these divisions. So 165 would be super lightweight, 175 would be super welterweight, 195 is super middleweight, and 225 is cruiserweight. That's the official ABC unified rules, the weight classes.
But if you go 165 to 175 and don't have a 170 division, do you think they'll still call it super welterweight?
Again, right now it is called that under the ABC, but
yeah.
the UFC, they decide. They can call it whatever they want. It, literally, the commissions have nothing to do with titles. It's not like sanctioning bodies in boxing. Like, the UFC creates their own titles. They can make it up as they go along.
Yeah, I think no one else except for us, maybe, and one other person on the planet cares about what they call these weight classes. But I'm fascinated by all this. I'm also fascinated, and I'd love to get your thoughts. I didn't ask you about this last week. What about the nutritionist wars that are playing out on my show? Come on, you know these guys very well. This is right up your alley. You have to be loving Mike Dolce versus George Lockhart. You're loving this.
I mean, I get along with both guys. So I while I find it entertaining, I think that I mean it's a lot. It's a lot going on. I don't think we need this.
Come on. We need this.
Why? Why do we need it? I just want to see fighters make weight safely. I don't know if we, and if both guys can do that, and I think that I trust that both guys can do that on the regular. I think that's all that matters. I don't think we need to you know, be fighting. If that's what they want to do and they get paid and people want to see it, that's fine. They are fighters. I mean, they were fighters. But it's a lot. It's a lot going on.
No, I'm kidding, of course. No one wants to see this kind of fighting. But I will say, I wonder, you know, they both present very interesting cases. You're an unbiased participant in all of this. You know them very well. Who is truly at fault here? Is there one person who started all of this, in your opinion, based on what you've heard?
I don't know. I don't think there's anyone at fault. I think it's a situation where both guys are very competitive. They're both fighters. They both feel like they are the best at what they do, and they have different methods, and the other one does not like the other one's method. But I mean, when it comes to you know, Dolce, he's really the guy who started the whole thing. You know, he deserves credit for being kind of the pioneer of the weight cut coach, the weight cut guru, the nutritionist in MMA. And then, and in my mind, I mean, he's obviously done a great job. And then George Lockhart took it to a great level himself with Lockhart and Leaf and that whole team. And they have just a ton of, I mean, just a ridiculous amount of clients. And they do a great job. And I think both sides do a great job. They just have different methods, and that happens, right? I mean, it happens in sports journalism. You know, there are rivalries there too. It doesn't mean one is right, one is wrong. It's just there are different methods, and both are good for what they are.
You wrote a great story that just got posted today about one of Lockhart and Leith's clients. She works very closely with Tyler Minton, who's one of the best nutritionists in this game as well. Her name is Megan Anderson. We just spoke very briefly about her with New York Rick, but I want to ask you about the story that you wrote about her weight cutting process, because there aren't a lot of true 145ers out there. She's a true 145er. She starts her camps, according to your story, at around 170 pounds. And correct me if I'm wrong here, she eats typically every Sunday when she's out of camp a whole pack of bacon. Is that accurate?
A whole pack of bacon. And not only that, she clarified that on Twitter a few hours ago, that it isn't just a small pack of bacon. It is a pound of bacon. She eats a pound of bacon every Sunday when she's not in training camp. And she's a legend for that.
Wow. and so once the fight is signed, like once training camp starts, that stops?
Yeah, yes, that stops. She, other than that, that's kind of her cheat day, according to Tyler Minton, her nutritionist. So she eats pretty cleanly other than that one day of the week out of the off season, and then when she does start the training camp, the portion sizes do become a little bit smaller. The training ramps up, so she's able to lose weight gradually, and so on and so forth. But it is you know, for a woman in the UFC, it might be the biggest weight cut, going from you know, 170 or higher. She told me that for the Holly Holm fight last year in Chicago, she was actually at 176 pounds going to training camp.
Wow.
Which it is harder, and ask any nutritionist who does this, ask either Dolce or Lockhart, they would agree that it is tougher for women to cut weight than it is for men because of hormonal reasons and body chemistry issues. So that's a very large weight cut that she has, and she has no margin for error, Ariel. I mean, if she there's no cheat meal for Megan Anderson once training camp starts. So, that's it. She has to stick to the diet 100%. Otherwise, she's not making 146.
So, like,
Well,
sorry for interrupting. But what kind of pain? Like, right now, it's Wednesday afternoon. Did he give you a sense of like what she's eating Wednesday afternoon before the Friday weigh-in? How much she should weigh around this time? What kind of struggle it's going to start to be as we get closer to Friday?
Yeah, yeah. So Tuesday is the arrival time for fighters for fight weeks for a Saturday show. So she'll try to come into that Tuesday at about 160 or so pounds, maybe a little bit more, between 160 and 163. And Minton keeps her on a 3,000 calorie a day diet, which sounds like a lot because it is a lot. And it's a little bit different than what other nutritionists will do. And the reasoning basically is if you reduce that number, then her metabolism starts crashing and she won't be able to lose the weight in a healthy way, or maybe not at all. So he keeps a high calorie diet, and there is a menu in that story that she had yesterday. Actually, Minton sent us the menu that he had for her, and it's six meals, and they're all about 500 calories a piece or so on average. So she's being fed a lot, and she's drinking 2 gallons of water per day, with the water cut in mind on Thursday night into Friday morning.
Wow, yeah, it's a fascinating story. Great insight. You've been crushing. I'm not just saying that because we're buds, but that's another great story. This card is fun. Like this card to me is not getting a lot of play. It's sort of flying under the radar because of the pay per view last week, and Bellator had a show last week as well, which was, you know, I thought pretty stacked as far as the main card is concerned. But then you've got, you know, the Ferguson Cerrone announcement and Diaz Pettis, and there's just a lot going on right now. But RDA Lee is fun. I really like the Ian Heinisch versus Antonio Carlos Jr. fight. The Megan Anderson, Felicia Spencer fight is great. Lance Oliveira is great. I'm looking forward to the debut of former LFA champion Austin Hubbard. Sajara Eubanks finally moving up. I like that fight against Aspen Ladd, who's, you know, a bantamweight title contender, in my opinion. Charles Jourdain, a Canadian prospect, taking a fight on short notice against Desmond Green. There's a lot to like here. I'm kind of just running through everything at this point, but there's a lot to like on this card, which kicks off 5 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus. The best part is 8 p.m. Eastern main card start on ESPN Plus.
I'm a little bummed that Neil Magny versus Vicente Luque is off because of Magny's issues with USADA, failed the drug test. That was a good fight.
Yeah.
What did he fail for? That's not happening. I'm sorry?
What did he fail for?
It's a substance called LGD4033. It is in the same family, Ariel, as Osterine.
Uh-oh.
So what USADA has been seeing lately, as we know, is that Osterine is frequently found in contaminated supplements. And Walt Harris, the UFC heavyweight, just failed the drug test back in December for this LGD4033 thing, and quickly found out that it came from a tainted supplement, and USADA only suspended him 4 months. Now, I don't know if that is going to be Magny's situation, but I think there's a pretty good chance that it was from a contaminated supplement. And again, that's speculation, educated speculation based off what I know about that substance and what's been going on lately with USADA and how they're treating it. But that's pretty much what I know at this point.
I want to ask you one more thing before I let you go and we wrap this bad boy up. You wrote another great story about Andrade's slam and, you know, the I guess you can call it controversy and should the rule be revised again, as we talked about earlier with New York Rick, it's 100% legal slam. But as far as what the people are saying, the lawmakers, the regulators, the officials in this sport, do you think that they are going to look at what happened on Saturday? I mean, I think the UFC and the sport itself dodged a major bullet. That could have been disastrous. That could have been career and life threatening for Rose had she, you know, fallen maybe just a little differently. And again, worth noting that had she let go of the Kimura hold, she definitely would not have landed on her head. So that's why it's essentially not an illegal move. And so you have to put some of the blame on her shoulders, but still scary stuff. She lands on her head. She knocks herself out. Do you feel like they are going to look at that and try to revise that or no?
I think that they may have a discussion about it, and Cristiano Sampaio, who is the Brazilian MMA Athletic Commission executive director, who the agency that was regulating that event last week in Rio de Janeiro, he sent an email to Sean Wheelock, the committee chair of the MMA Rules and Regulations Committee, right after the show, saying that he wanted to discuss slams in their next call, which is in a few weeks from now. So I think they will at least bring it to a discussion, but most of the regulators that I spoke to for that story, including Big John McCarthy, are against any kind of a change. I mean, it happened very infrequently. It was very scary to see. Don't get me wrong. It was very, very frightening to watch that. But it happened so infrequently. There's only been 11 slam knockouts in UFC history, going back to 1993. I mean, it happens infrequently. Doesn't mean that one couldn't cause a tremendous amount of damage, but the rules are written to prevent basically the top of the head going into the canvas and causing pressure, causing a collapse of the cervical spine. That's why the rules are written the way it is. Not that what happened to Rose wasn't dangerous in itself. It was, but I guess they would make the argument, other regulators would say, well, so is getting punched in the head, so is getting kicked in the head, so are all those concussive blows that fighters go through on the regular. So that is pretty much what I gleaned from my reporting on that story.
Are you going to Chicago?
That's the plan.
Well, I hope you'll join us. June 7th, Mark. You missed the announcement. Breaking news, June 7th, we'll have a live taping of Ariel Helwani's MMA show in front of a live crowd. Yes, it's actually happening.
No way.
Years in the making. Guests, Q&A, meet and greet. I think I have the inside track on tickets. I'll see if I'll get a dollar or two off. They're very expensive. They're incredibly expensive. I'm just joking about that. They're not expensive at all.
And that's the Thursday before the fight?
The Friday before, UFC 238 Friday. In Chicago. If you can carve out some time, I'd love to have you there.
After the official weigh-ins?
After the official weigh-ins, 7 o'clock.
Well, I'll have to check my calendar, Ariel. I'll have to see if I can make that one.
This is why I love Mark, because he first asked about the official weigh-ins, which everyone knows. Well, you're talking about the ceremonial weigh-ins, right? The afternoon ones?
I'm talking about the morning weigh-ins.
You thought I was going to do this in the middle of the morning weigh-ins? Why the hell would I do that? I have a job to do.
The official weigh-ins are the only ones that really register with me, Ariel, as a regulatory guru. So I don't even think about the ceremonial weigh-ins.
Yes. Well, I was going to say, this is why I respect you so much, because you would have gone to the ceremonial weigh-ins, which are completely useless other than you get to see them face off, rather than come support my live show. But I respect that. I respect that because you're there to do the job. I would never do this at the same time as the official weigh-ins. Regardless, I know you're very busy. You're very popular. If you can carve out some time, and this is really just a way for me to remind everyone one more time that we are doing this and that I'll have more information about it on our Monday show and on social media and things like that. So don't worry. I'll send the link where you can get tickets. It's going down. I'm very excited. I can't wait to do it. And I hope you can be there if you're going to be free.
Where are you doing it?
Well, that's coming, Mark. Okay. Stop asking all these questions. I'm just giving you that
I'm
for
I'm
now,
a reporter.
Right?
This is what I do.
I know.
This is the MMA reporters.
That's true. More to come. All right. TBD.
All right. All
TBA,
right.
I should say. Mark, great stuff as always, my man. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, man.
All right. There he is, Mark Raimondi. Appreciate his time. Thank you very much to him. Thank you to Brett Okamoto. Thank you very much, as always, to New York Rick. And of course, thanks to all of you who have been downloading, subscribing, rating, reviewing. I want to see those go up. I want to see them up. Not putting any pressure, but I want to see them up. The rates, reviews, subscriptions, the downloads. I have no idea how to monitor any of these things, but I just want to see them up, all right? That's all. I want someone to say, holy smokes, we just got flooded with all these things. All right? All right. It's a deal. Anyway, another big weekend. I was going to say busy. Biggie. He was from New York, so I guess that works. UFC's in Rochester this Saturday. It's another busy weekend in mixed martial arts this weekend with the UFC, KSW 49, CFFC, ONE Championship, which features the debut of Super Sage Northcutt. How about that? Looking forward to that. Shinya Aoki against Christian Lee in their main event. So there's a lot going on, and there's a lot going down, and there's obviously going to be a lot to discuss next week on the program. For now, though, we are out of time. Again, thank you to all our guests this week. Thanks to Daniel back in Bristol. Thanks to all of you for listening. Enjoy your weekend. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the fights. We'll talk to you next week.